Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. I'm Carl Nordgren. Thanks for coming to listen to the show. I hope it's serving you. Its purpose is to help you become your most creatively entrepreneurial person, to create your own understanding of how that's going to serve you. Boy, I hope it's working for you. In today's episode, number 13, the title of it, the theme of it, is Nature's Creative Nature. Nature's Creative Nature. I've spent a long life outdoors, lots of time outdoors. It started as a boy where I was woods wandering at the age of 7 with my first dog, Cookie, my beagle, in Midwest cornfields and woods that were steadily becoming suburbia from the post-war baby boom. And then I was hunting those woods with pointers and setters, hunting for pheasants, but with a bow and arrow. Really what I was doing was working my dogs out in the woods where I loved to be. I didn't expect to shoot pheasants with a bow and arrow, and I wasn't surprised that I didn't. I spent a lot of time fishing in farm ponds for bass and bluegill, and then as I've mentioned in a couple of shows, I was a fishing guide for 3 summers in Northwest Ontario, for 1 summer and 2 winters on the White River in Arkansas. And it's one of my first proud accomplishments that I was able to pay for just about all of my college education working out of doors. And I'm still always out in the woods with dogs. We've been down here in South Durham County for about 40 years. 20 of those years, we lived on 6 acres in South Durham County, where we raised goats and a flock of 30 or so free-range chickens. And one year we had a hog to butcher. We boarded horses and a pony. And towards the end of our time there, we adopted 3 alpaca rescues whose flaws had them culled from a commercial breeder's herd, and we took care of them. And so on these 40 years that we've lived down here in South Durham County, for at least 38 of them, we've lived on one branch or another of New Hope Creek, which of course is the watershed for Orange County. But you know, its last stretch as it heads into Jordan Lake, it's almost like a river, and it winds through 40,000 acres of woods that you own. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about those 40,000 acres of woods. And today I'm going to share some stories of nature that represent or demonstrate creative energies and strategies. Some we learn from directly, perhaps, others to contemplate, and by doing so, exercising our creative capacities. Think of Abraham Joshua Heschel, the Jewish theologian. He said something very much like, I think this is a close paraphrase, "The beginning of wisdom is awe. And the beginning of awe is wonder." So let's wonder together about some really interesting natural occurrences. For a whole bunch of years that I lived on those 6 acres, I spent almost 7 days a week out in the woods with my dog, something like this, at least 5 days a week, often 7 days a week, where I would go into the woods with my 2 dogs and my 2 Nubian goats, one a rich, deep chocolate brown named Persephone, the other a more tawny named Athena. In those days, I was teaching and I was writing fiction and I was advising startups. And on any given day, I would bring out a combination of papers and proposals and books with me to work what others would call work. I enjoyed it too much to really see work. I was delighted that I was earning my living outdoors. And so we'd walk off our little farmette onto the 40,000 acres that you own. We had a boundary with those 40,000 acres, shared a boundary that you own that is managed for you by the Army Corps of Engineers as Jordan Lake Floodplain, that's managed hunting and game folks. They groom these fields and these forests for deer and turkey and dove hunting. And so on the hike into the 40,000 acres, the goats and the dogs were always within about 10 yards of me, the dogs a little bit ahead, sniffing every trail, the goats trotting just a bit behind, grabbing a bit of green if they could. But they didn't want to do too much of that because they didn't want to lose ground. They needed my presence to be comfortable in the wild. And after a short hike, maybe half of these hikes were short when I was with the goats, The other half were long when it was just the dogs. I'd leave the goats in a pen when I was in the mood for a longer hike. I'd settle under a tree and I'd pull out whatever work I was currently focusing on, and the dogs would take off on their nice little hunting trip. They'd come back and check every 10 or 15 minutes to make sure I was still there, and the goats began to browse and browse and browse. They're the original browsers. Before that word meant behavior like wandering down the aisles of your public library or neighborhood bookstore, partially focusing your attention, but also open for any unexpected, interesting distraction, that kind of browsing. Well, these goats were browsing, and they would bite off a piece, rip it from the bush, and chew it just a little bit, but at a frantic pace. Bite and rip and chew and bite and rip and chew at a frantic pace, a pace more like today's online browsing, right, where you sometimes get so frantic. And they would bite off a bit and swallow it down to their front ruminant stomach. And later, when it was full, they would come even closer to me for comfort here in the woods and fold their legs underneath them and lay down close by me. And then they, of course, would begin to regurgitate that which they had swallowed for complete mastication, to really work that on their back teeth, really work that bit of green that they had bitten, swallowed. And watching them, it was easy for me to see this as an analogous to a good creative process. I don't know if this process will serve you all the time, but when it does, think about this, that when you're working on something new, when you're working on a new challenge, a new problem, quickly sample as much as you can, right? Get as many perspectives as you can. Quickly get as much information as you can. Get as many data points as you can. Don't spend a whole lot of energy integrating it yet. Just collecting. And then later, slowly, completely dissecting it and learning from it and relating one bit to another and, in fact, integrating it for your benefit. So I began to understand goats as prey as I was out there, right, as natural prey. And it's important when you're prey that you don't bloat yourself. You have to have full energy and full alertness always, ready to dash in an instant. And so this ruminant system was something like a control for them, a governor on the digestive system that kept them from ever getting so full that they became languid, that they would go into a torpor, right? Like you and I do when we've had too much to eat and we just settle back on the couch and we can relax and we're half asleep. They can't afford to do that, right? When the dogs would come running back, that would startle them and they had to act immediately as if they were the prey, and immediately their tail would go up, and immediately three or four pellets of poop would go popping out, and they were as quick as they could be because that's how their digestive system served them. It never wore them down. And of course, out in the woods, we're surrounded by green, so let me talk about that one more time with you all. We've talked about it before. Isn't maybe one of the most basic processes on our planet is photosynthesis. And so it's wonderful to think that staring at the color green for 30 seconds, research shows, when you stare at the color green for 30 seconds, your creative performance improves dramatically. The research showed that over four different creative exercises, your performance improves dramatically when you stare at the color green. And it's also interesting that our eyes pick up the color green faster than any other color, and we can see more shades of green than any other color. Come on back after the break. We'll have more for you. Thank you.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
And welcome back. Now, on one of my trips out in the woods with my dogs and my goats, sitting at under one of my favorite oak trees, it was an oak tree that was right on the edge, the forest behind me, a beautiful meadow in front of me. And I noticed, as I was watching the goats one day, that there was a chrysalis in the bush that they were chewing on, that they were eating. And I didn't think they would ever purposely damage it, but just the same, they were coming so close and might inadvertently do so. So I broke the twig off that the chrysalis was attached to, placed it very carefully, much higher up in the brush, And again, put it in there really good so wind wouldn't knock it down, so rain wouldn't knock it down. And then a few days later, I came back, and its occupant had finished changing and had flown away. Now, I've spent a lot of time as a kid sorting out ideas about what happens when a caterpillar, let's say a monarch caterpillar, becomes a monarch butterfly, right? It's a caterpillar for about 2 weeks. And as a caterpillar, what is it? It's really good at moving straight ahead and consuming whatever is in its path. And then it's a chrysalis for a little over a week and a couple of days, about 10 days it's in its chrysalis form. Then the butterfly emerges from the chrysalis, and it lives for about 5 weeks, so over twice as long as the caterpillar lives is the butterfly's lifespan, except for those Mexico flyers that you've read about that go on down, migrate down to Mexico. They will live for 5 or 6 times longer than the caterpillar. And again, as a kid, I had all sorts of ideas about how did one aspect of that caterpillar body change to set the stage for another change, for another change so that this radical transformation could occur. I could never fully wrap my head around how that happens. And then about 15 years ago, I read about what happens. And maybe you already know this, but I'll bet I have a couple of insights in here for you. And that is, it becomes totally liquid in the chrysalis. The caterpillar digests itself. It emits, excretes an enzyme that digests itself. And so now in the chrysalis, it's liquid. There's no form. There's no order. It's just soup. It's just soup, except for a small number of small clusters of cells that have retained their structural integrity because they carry the code. They carry the information that's going to guide this transformation, that's going to guide this from a soup into this extraordinary creature that's going to come out of the chrysalis. Now, the clusters have to find each other to do their work. A critical mass of these clusters have to come together to do their work. And as they begin to find each other, they get attacked by the soup. There's something in the soup that attacks them. But when they do come together and they can complete their mission, boy, would I like to walk in the woods with the scientist that came up with the name for these cells. These clusters of cells that have the code, the scientist called these cells imaginal cells. I love that. They called them imaginal cells. And when I heard that term, imaginal cells, read that term, imaginal cells, I thought to myself, this process of a monarch caterpillar becoming a butterfly sort of gives me some insight into our nation, into our country. For a couple of centuries, our country was very good at being a caterpillar, very good at moving straight ahead and devouring everything in its path, consuming everything in its path. I believe that where we are right now is in this interim chrysalis stage where there's chaos, right? Where you don't know what's going on, right? There's so much confusion, so little order, so little structure to what's going on now. And I offer myself as a way out of this chaotic soup, I offer myself, and I'll bet there's lots of you as well who would offer yourselves as imaginal cells, as having thoughts and ideas about how we not just map a better future together, but how maybe we can even create a transcendent future together. So I sure hope that one day I get to talk with you all personally about your role in helping us get out of this chaotic state that we're in and become this transcendent country that we can become. Another story, one that I've told you before, but I like this one and I think it really fits in today's episode as well, and that's the story about the two snapping turtles, the two baby snapping turtles that I rescued one day. I was driving again through these 40,000 acres of woods on Stagecoach Road in my old pickup truck, and I saw ahead of me on the road two shapes crossing the road with an unusual locomotion. I pulled my truck over the side and ran down to where they were, and they were two, I would think, a day or 2 days old baby snapping turtles about the size of a half dollar, their shells were. When I picked them up, one of them totally hid inside its shell. The other one stuck its neck out as far as they could and threatened me, right? So I thought, okay, I don't want these guys to get smashed on the side of the road. I put them in my truck. I drove to where there was a path where I could walk deep into the woods and find a branch of New Hope Creek where I could put the turtles, and I did, in the water right at the bank of New Hope Creek. And within a blink of an eye, folks, in an instant, they both disappeared. They were gone. One of them buried itself in the soft mud bottom of the creek floor. The other one darted into the deepest water. And I was stunned by this. I thought to myself, oh my gosh, no matter what predator was after them, no matter what predator's strategy was to pursue them, one of them would have survived. One of them would have gotten away. And I thought, wow, these two opposite behaviors, both were necessary, right? So if I ask the question, what should a turtle do to be safe in the when being predated, when being chased by a predator, I'd find two conflicting ideas. If I asked a different question, within a population of newborn turtles, what sorts of behaviors should be available to make it most likely that most of these baby turtles, enough of these baby turtles will survive to reproduce itself into the next generation, then I'm asking a question where both can be true, where these two contradictory ideas can both be true. And that's what I've tried to do since I've had that insight. When I'm working on a project, when I'm working on a new idea, when I'm working on a new venture, and I find conflicting things that I'd like to do around this, they conflict with each other, these two ideas that I want to develop. I say to myself, well, rather than compromise, maybe I should take a step back and think, how can I restate the strategy? How can I reframe the question so that both of these conflicting ideas can both be utilized? I can use the power of both of them as I try to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish. All right, we got a break coming up, folks. I look forward to talking to you when you come back. Thanks very much for being part of this show.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back to the final segment of our show. We're talking about nature's creative nature, and we've got a few more examples of it, a few more things to think about. This next one really, I think, fits in the category of creating a little bit of wonder in you that you can think about, and it's both a good creative exercise, but it also maybe can lead to some wisdom. I'm reading an awesome book right now called When Animals Dream. And to think about animals dreaming is to think about, do animals have imagination? And the author addresses that early on, addresses the concept of, do animals have an imagination early on? I've had so many dogs and so many other animals, I'm convinced as I can be that my dogs have dreamed, legitimate dreams. Well, in this book, When Animals Dream, there's posited the 4 degrees of imagination. I had not seen this structure before of 4 different sorts of imagination. I've really enjoyed contemplating these 4 different types of imagination. And the scientists believe that mammals for sure and maybe a few birds share the first 3 degrees of imagination with humans, but the 4th degree is specific to humans, and here they are. The 1st degree of imagination is when one would see an object. You see an object, and it creates a feeling that's not directly delivered by your perception of that object. What do I mean by that? It's a faraway view of an orange, so far away that you can't smell it, yet your imagination does, right? You smell it in your imagination. So there's one. An object creates a feeling that's not directly delivered through your contact with that object, with your relationship to that object. The 2nd degree of imagination, and as the first, the second one is one that scientists believe is true for mammals, of seeing an object that makes you think of another object, right? You see water, and that makes you think of wine, and thinking of wine makes you think of a wine glass, right? So there's a 2nd degree of imagination. Again, one that many scientists, the people behind this book, believe is true for mammals as well. The third degree of imagination is thinking of situations when the elements aren't present at all, right? Imagining a meadow when you're in an office building, right? That's a third degree of imagination. And once again, these scientists believe that that level, that type of imagination is available to mammals and perhaps a few birds. The fourth degree of imagination is one that they're pretty sure is unique to the human, animal. And that's when you can imagine a perfect situation by combining some unique combination, of objects, and that kind of imagination, right, where you're really constructing something that you hadn't ever seen before. You can come up with a perfect situation that happens when you combine some, in a fresh way, some unique combinations of objects. That fourth degree of imagination is one that, again, most scientists don't believe is available to mammals. I find this fascinating. I also found it quite interesting that back in the 1800s, Victorian scientists had no problem at all believing that mammals dream. And in the case of Charles Darwin, he was pretty sure that some birds dreamed as well. It was last century, it was the 1900s, where scientists began to deny that animals had an imagination, began to deny that they dreamed, made them more brutish in their sense of them. And it doesn't surprise you, does it, when you think for just a second what happened in that century, those 1900s, in husbandry, right, where we were steadily moving from family farms to big manufacturing factory type animal care, right? Big animal lots, big commercial chicken coops. I remember having a guy who had been all about commercial chicken raising. He was developing drugs for commercial chicken raising, and he had spent a lot of time in commercial hen houses, chicken houses, and then he came to my little farm and saw how smart these free-range chickens are, and it blew him away. He just assumed chickens were as dumb as the process had made them. He'd assumed that they were that dumb, that they didn't get dumbed down by the process. So When Animals Dream, great book, great book. And so as we're winding down here, folks, I want to remind you of a couple of exercises, a couple of creative exercises that you can invest yourself in that will really help you grow your creative and your entrepreneurial qualities and are sort of consistent with what we've been talking about here in terms of nature's creative nature. The first I've said in this program, stare at green. I urge people to have a nice block of green next to their laptop, next to their bed, and stare at it two or three times a day, right? That takes a whole minute of your out of your day to maximize your creative qualities, right? Walk. When you walk, the two hemispheres of your brain get integrated. When you walk on uneven ground, like in the woods, that works even better for you. You get even more fully integrated when you're walking on uneven ground. And then I love this phrase. I heard it one day when I was in church, the line from the hymn, "I wonder as I wander out under the sky." Go out and wonder, and go out and wander, and do it in the woods, man, and you're just going to get so many nice benefits from that. And I'm out of time here. I've got a great show for you for next week. It's our 14th show. 14 is a special number for me. I sure hope you dial in. Thank you very much for listening today.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.